The past 2 weeks' events in Afghanistan have cast a shadow on all our lives. In this episode, we bring back Tamina, a brand that helps transform lives in conflict zones through economic development and opportunities. We had initially released this episode in February 2020, a time much different than now, a time full of hope and optimism. Tamina was founded by a US-born fresh college graduate to help bring high-quality Afghan saffron and saffron tea to the international markets. Mindful Businesses is bringing this episode back to you so you may be able to visualize the rich culture, heritage, and beauty of Afghanistan and its people. We are partnering with Education Foundation for Afghanistan to raise funds to help protect and educate women. 100% of your donation will go to these causes. When a girl is educated, she uplifts the next generation. Please don't look away. Donate by clicking on the link in the episode notes.
People see Afghan saffron, they're able to think, here is a very high quality luxury product that is not just coming out of this nation, but is really helping to rewrite and to write a new story for this nation.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands which are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we have with us Sarah Jackson, founder and CEO of Tamina, to be brave. We do not use Sarah's real name due to security reasons. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, Vidya, for having me.
Most Americans associate Afghanistan with war, bombings, ISIS, a lack of women's rights. But in fact, Afghanistan has been an important country in the ancient Silk Route, connecting China to the Mediterranean countries. This strategic position and its proximity to Russia has shaped Afghanistan's history. Give us a short history lesson about its rich heritage.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for a lot of Americans because Afghanistan really only enters our kind of mental scape and mental history starting with 9/11. And obviously, before then, there has been a very, very long history. And so Afghanistan, as you shared, used to be a very key area on the Silk Road. And because of its strategic location, it attracted a lot of empires. And it's very interesting about Afghanistan. There's a quote about the country where people say that it is easy to invade, but difficult to conquer. And so you have everybody from Alexander the Great to Genghis Khan to just about every great empire who has come through Afghanistan, try to conquer the nation, but were unable to do so. And so that really speaks to the strength and the resilience of the Afghan people. And when we enter slightly more modern history of the 1900s, up to the time that Afghanistan entered war, which was before the 1970s, it was actually called the Paris of Central Asia. And so if you look at pictures from Afghanistan in the 1950s and the 1960s, it will just be very fascinating to what we have as Westerners in our mind of what Afghanistan is. There were women going to school and they were wearing mini skirts. There was this rich culture and rich history that was in the Afghan people. I even remember actually seeing this there was an article in Vogue in the 1950s, and it was highlighting a fashion designer who came from Afghanistan. And so it's interesting because there's so much more than meets the eye for this nation. There's such a heritage of so much beauty and so much culture. And it is sad that people don't know that, but I think the more that we're willing to look, the deeper that we're willing to investigate and research, it's very easily found.
Talk about how the British and the Russians, their interference changed what we know, what the present situation in Afghanistan is right now.
Yeah. So if you look at the past 100 years of the history of Afghanistan, there essentially were kind of three periods of conflict with Western nations. And so the first one started with the British in the early 1900s, and there were a series of Anglo-Afghan wars.
Which I must say that the British did not win. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. They did not win. They were kind of chased out through the series of the wars. And 1919 is Afghan independence, and that is actually when they kind of gained independence from the British. And so they were not victorious.
Mm-hmm. So when British ruled India, they did not rule Afghanistan.
No, they did not.
Interesting.
And it's interesting because there is slightly this pattern of really big Western powers who were able to conquer the neighboring nations. But once they tried to get into Afghanistan, they failed. And so Britain was a great example of that, the early 1900s. Very similar thing happened with the USSR and the Soviet Union in the 1970s, where they had conquered most of the other Central Asian nations. And Afghanistan was the last place that they tried to go into. And it's really fascinating what happened with the Soviet Union in the 1970s and 1980s, because Afghanistan ultimately became their equivalent of the Vietnam War. They tried to go in, they tried to conquer, they were unable to do so, but it was actually the kind of sucking out of resources and all of that eventually contributed to the collapse of the Soviet Union. And so it's just a really fascinating place in terms of how resistant the people have been to outside invaders and outside empires. And then as we have seen more recently, the U.S. has come into Afghanistan starting in 2001.
There was monarchy in Afghanistan prior to 1919?
Yeah, actually up to the period of the USSR, there were kings in Afghanistan. And so the last king, I don't know the exact year, but he was ruling all the way up till it became the Democratic Republic and became like a communist government.
And so now the situation in Afghanistan is they have a democratically elected president, Ashraf Ghani.
Yes.
How is everyday life in Afghanistan now?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, some people, they imagine that I'm living out in an active battlefield, like in the trenches, which, you know, obviously is not true.
So how often do you have to go back there?
I live there. I live there full time.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm based out in Afghanistan. And so it's interesting because on one hand, you have very normal life. You have kids who are going to school, adults who are going to work and to their jobs every day, and people just trying to have a normal semblance of life in the midst of war. However, depending on where you are, you might also have bombs every week in your city, or you might have high rates of crime, or you might have your village that is, you know, oppressed by insurgent groups. And it's, in one sense, you do have normal life, yet in another sense, it's very much a place of war. And as I shared with the history, Afghanistan has actually been in war nonstop for more than 40 years. And so it's really fascinating just interacting with the people of Afghanistan, because you have entire generations of people who have never seen peace in their life. And they don't know what it's like to live in a nation of peace. They don't know what it's like to live a life of peace.
When I think about Afghanistan, I'm thinking about Kite Runner, mm-hmm. In Swallows of Kabul, and those sort of books and some other movies that I've seen, and in just women in hijabs, mm-hmm. skirting away in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's not the case all over Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely not the case all over. And I think what has been encouraging for me personally has been seeing how culture has been shifting among the young people. And so with the younger generation, it's really fascinating. I think this last statistic that I heard is that over 70% of the Afghan population is under the age of 30.
Wow.
Yeah. And so like to give you kind of a frame of reference, I think the average in the U.S., it's about 30% of the population is under the age of 30 in the U.S. And so you have a massively young population.
And you have this massively young population, which has never seen peace.
They have never seen peace. But I think one thing that is really encouraging about this young generation is that compared to their parents, they have at least seen a little bit more stability in their life. It's like they might have really young memories of the Taliban regime, but they might not have been alive during the civil war. I've heard horrible, horrible stories of that civil war. And so there, you have a generation where they're young and they have hope in their life. And what's been really fascinating to observe is that these young people now have access to Facebook. A lot of them are on Instagram. And so in a way that a lot of their parents were unable to see, they're seeing what's happening around the world. And they're seeing, what does a coffee shop look like outside? You know, like, what is dating like for people in Western nations? They're seeing a lot of things that were previously unavailable to people in Afghanistan because